Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
This podcast is brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey. Native Grape Odyssey is an educational project financed by the European Union to promote European wine in Canada, Japan, and Russia. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast with me, Monty Wood. My guest today is Ginevra Venerosi Pesciolini.
Yes.
From the Tenute di Ghizzano, which is in the province of...
Pisa.
In Tuscany.
In Tuscany.
Welcome.
Thank you, Monty.
Give us a little bit about the history of this estate, because it's very ancient, isn't it? You have some very old buildings and towers and things on your property.
Yeah, we arrived there in the late 14th century, and at first was only, you know, to defend ourselves from the enemies.
From the Spanish invaders, yeah. across the Tyrrhenian Sea.
From other Tuscan cities, and we built a tower, and then in the following century we built the house attached to the tower, and then we started our agriculture activity.
It's a very large estate, isn't it, Gaetano? How big is it?
Still is 300 hectares.
How much of that is vineyard?
Only 20 hectares.
And the rest is what? Cereal crops and olive oil?
Olive groves, 20 hectares, and then cereals crop for 100 hectares in the flat part of the estate, and then still a lot of woods. So biodiversity is there.
Now you started working organically in about 2003.
Yeah.
And then you became certified organic.
Yeah.
And now you're one of these weirdy, beardy, crazy Aussies who are biodynamic.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about why you decided to go organic first of all.
When I arrived there, I had to learn everything because my education was completely another one. I was graduated in foreign languages and literatures, so I really had to learn what agriculture was from the field. And so I inherited a way of doing which was very conventional because, you know, in the 70s everything changed in Tuscany and we had to use tractors and the vines were replanted following the dimension of the tractors and we had to produce a lot, otherwise we couldn't sell enough, but the quality was down. So when my father decided to invest in the vineyard, in the cellar, to try to make a better wine was the 1985, but still he was really behaving in a conventional way, treating not only the vines, but all the soil of the estate. Because the concept was eliminate everything was not good for the crop. And when I observed my land year after year, I understood that I had to spray something new every year to fight against another insect or another herb or the grass or whatever. So I was feeling bad and...
spending lots of money.
Yeah, spending lots of money and not obtaining the good result.
Okay.
And I wanted to start to do something healthier for my soil. And so I started traveling around Europe, visiting other vineyards, and I understood that I could be successful in having some good crops, not using so many chemicals. So that was the first thing, and nobody wants to follow me because, you know, it was a risk.
It was seen as risky, yeah.
Yeah, I started from the vineyards. And then I demonstrated to my father and the other people who were working there that we could obtain some good crop, maybe better, not using a lot of things, spending less money in other paradox. And from that way, he let me do, you know, the real change to behave in the same way in the whole estate, not only in the vines.
So not only, I mean, you were convinced, but and you sensed the farming that you were doing was not the right one. But probably the key battle, as you're outlining, is that inter-family battle, isn't it? It's convincing another human being that, listen, we really cannot continue farming the way we are, because we're going to go bankrupt. We're spending lots of money on stuff that really doesn't work, and we can see that it doesn't work.
Yeah, and that was a real fight.
Did you doubt yourself in any way at any stage? You must have thought, maybe he's right. Maybe we just stick with what we've got and just keep our fingers crossed. Maybe it'll start working, this conventional stuff, these herbicides. Maybe they're not so bad. Did you have that doubt in your mind?
Actually, I didn't. From the very beginning. But it's true that I started in 2003, which was a very dry and hot, as you remember, maybe, season. And that was easier, especially against the fungus. So 2004 was again a good... So, you know, with two good crops, I could go ahead. It's true that certain vintages, I lost some crops. 2008, 2014, in the recent... But in comparison to what is the result of the quality of the crop that you have no doubt that there are seasons that you cannot completely be clean of all risks, but you have more true and good.
You have more balanced grapes, do you? Are they easier to ferment?
They are easier to ferment.
A better kind of relationship between pH, the acid strength of the wine, and total acidity levels and sugar levels. And what about extractability, like getting those flavours, for example, out of the red wines that you make, the red wines, are they easier to extract? You find that?
Yeah, and with a shorter time, staying on the skins. So it's also another thing. I mean, you have good fermentation, but then you can extract everything if you want in a shorter time and not risk to have over-extracted wines and too heavy and not drinkable enough as I would like to drink my wines in the different level of structure, always eating food.
Did your neighbours come to ask you? I mean, they would have obviously seen the changes in your estate. It's not like it's a tiny estate. Were they sceptical? Were they negative, or did they call you up and say, hey, listen, can I come and have a
they
look?
They are very sceptical. They still are.
Still?
But they are changing a lot. But it's also true that I'm quite in the small place where I am, but I'm surrounded by myself most of the...
Oh, so you don't have a... You're surrounded by forest and you're a little bit isolated.
Yeah. And then now, from other hills, next hills, I have people visiting and trying to understand, and still very skepticism, you know.
Even after all these years. And what about your importers and your distributors in various countries? Were they very happy with what you're doing, or were they, we don't really care, we just care about the price, we don't care if you're organic or biodynamic? How did that work?
Things are changing, obviously, in these last 10 years, and have changed a lot. So people are more prepared. But at the beginning, and still some Russian, for example, they really did not know what biodynamic was, and Japanese too. So, but they're very curious and they're very open now. And as soon as the wine is good wine, so, and that's also my philosophy. I mean, it's true that we risk also in our way of making, of having certain lots which are not perfect. And I decided not to bottle them. So not to... In order to demonstrate that you can make good wines out of a biodynamic practice and a way of behaving also in the cellar, and it may happen that certain fermentation are not perfect, and I prefer not to bottle now, so not to promote the fact that biodynamic wines can smell bad, or it's true that you should leave them a little bit longer time in the glass and in the bottle.
Yeah, they take a little bit longer to come around, don't they? But that's probably to do with deeper rooting and having the physiological changes that the plants undergo in terms of plant expression. They're a little bit smaller, the leaves are a little bit smaller, a little bit tougher, the grapes are a little bit smaller. The tannins are probably a little bit more robust.
Yeah, and then when the vine is getting older, you know, the truth is coming out.
And it will live longer as well, then, ideally. So let's just go through some of the wines that you make. What are the names of your red wines?
Il Ghizzano is my bistro and pizza wine.
So how do you say that again?
Il Ghizzano.
Okay, the Ghizzano, okay.
The Ghizzano.
So that's your everyday sort of wine?
Yeah. No wood aging, so only stainless steel and cement tanks for 1 year, and then bottled, and should be, you know, a very fresh, fruity, and easy drinking, but where
that's the
fruit...
That's the cash flow wine, we call that the cash
flow. Yeah.
Get it in the winery.
It's also the cash flow.
Get it out of the door and pay some of those bills. Okay. So, and the next one?
Is Veneroso. Right. It's my, let's say, historical wine. First vintage was 1985, and now my current vintage is 2015, so I'm celebrating the 30th harvest.
So that's Sangiovese?
Sangiovese, 70%, and 30% is still Cabernet Sauvignon. Sangiovese here is coming from my oldest vines, whereas for Il Ghizzano, which is 95% Sangiovese, my grapes are coming from 7 to 15 years old vines.
Okay. So next
is Nambro. Nambro is my Tuscan Pomerol, because...
Okay, so that's spelt N-A-M-B-R-O-T, Nambrot.
Nambro. Nambro. Because either Veneroso and Nambro are two family names, first names, like my name is Ginevra. So just to give reason to a long tradition of a family in that area. And Nambro is Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and Petit Verdot. So trying to demonstrate that if certain grapes, they find their place, they ripen well, they express more of the territory than the varietal characteristics.
So now this guy Nambro, I've got a note here, lived during Charles the Great era.
Yeah.
So that's what, 1,000 years ago? Not Charlemagne.
It's 800.
Carlo Magno. So it is Charlemagne. So Charlemagne was like the first emperor of Europe, basically. And he was definitely a big fan of Tuscan wines, I can tell you that. Not a lot of people know that.
Yeah, and he's the first. He was the first member of the family. So back to the 800.
What, to your family?
Yeah.
So you're related to Charlemagne? Oh, you are? Wow. You know what? I'm so sorry we didn't put the red carpet up for you. That's terrible. I come from Britain where we have a royal family. I just feel awful. God, I was on such a high, this biodynamic talk and all this sort of stuff, and now it's just shattered.
Yeah, probably. I don't know if they would agree, but probably they will.
Okay. Any more red wines?
There's a new project of a wine, a 17 vintage, but it's not ready yet.
And named?
Would be Tenuta di Ghizzano.
And blend?
Still Sangiovese, 100%.
Okay.
From the very old vines.
Okay, and what type of soil are they on, these old Sangiovese vines?
They are limestone and a lot of fossils, because the whole area was covered by the sea in the Pliocene era. So a lot of calcare. So a lot of minerality to our Sangiovese.
How old are those vines?
These are 35 years old.
And is it all the grape variety, sorry, is all?
It's a mix of all variety that I found and I reproduced, and then a clone that I stole from Montalcino.
Okay. Well, that, you didn't hear that, guys. That doesn't mean that she literally stole it. Literally walked in with her Batman cape on in the middle of the night and started taking cuttings. But it's, let's leave that one there. Okay, now, do you make a Vinsanto?
I make a Passito. It was a Vinsanto. I wanted to be more free in having a wine that I like best than the Vinsanto. So similar way of making, because it's Malvasia, Trebbiano and Colombana grapes, the bunches are hanged in a room naturally aired, and they stay there for 3 months, and then
so they shrivel a little bit. Sugars concentrate, they're pressed and fermented.
Yeah, 110 residual sugar, and they ferment then in old barrels for 1 year only, and then 6 months in the stainless steel, and then bottled now and selling the 2016, and the name is San Germano. San Germano because it was the patron saint of Ghizzano.
Really?
And so before it was Vinsanto, I left the name.
What do you drink Vinsanto with?
With cantuccini, usually.
Which are crunchy biscuits?
Crunchy biscuits.
And you can dip them in the Vinsanto if you want to?
Yes.
A little bit nutty, the biscuits, aren't they, the cantuccini?
Yeah, with nuts. And then crostata. How do you say crostata?
So that's jam tart.
And then mid-season cheese. I mean, not very old.
Medium-aged cheese, not really spicy one. So you're talking like sheep's cheese, like pecorino.
Pecorino cheese. Yeah. Not fresh, but not aged.
Yeah. So not too kind of cheesy, stinky.
Yeah.
Just come out of the animal, kind of cheesy, stinky because it's had a bit of age. Cheesy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Do you think that would make a good sommelier, describing the food like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah. Okay. Alrighty. So I think we've kind of covered all the bases, haven't we?
There's a bianco too.
Oh, let's do that then.
Mm-hmm.
Like a bianco secco.
The bianco is Ghizzano bianco secco. Vermentino, Trebbiano and Malvasia Bianca.
So that's traditional local varieties?
Yes. Only stainless steel, but 3 days on the skins and then 3 months on the lee.
So you're bringing a little bit of a natural Easter there as well as an organic and biodynamic Easter?
Yeah, a little bit.
But you're not going...
Not extreme.
Yeah.
I'm not going to the orange wine, but I like to extract more character from the grapes, Bianco. But it's an easy drink in Bianco. It's a Ghizzano Bianco.
So you could drink that on its own, but it is, I imagine, it does have the texture for food as well. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah? So what do you drink that with?
That is with all, you know, aperitivi in Tuscany with the crostini and fresh
tomatoes. So that will be toasted bread with like liver pate on the top?
Yeah, mainly, but then any pasta with vegetables or pomodoro or first courses.
So are you more of a vegetarian than a carnivore then?
Me, yes.
Yeah. Are you total
or game.
Are you a total vegetarian?
No.
So what for you is the most important thing about biodynamics? It's the most important idea or thing that you do, and what do you think is the effect that it has on the wine? Can you taste an effect or see an effect in the vineyards using that technique?
Yeah, the most important thing is that it helped me to see my land, to look, to observe, and so to behave knowing what you are doing.
The effect you're having.
Yeah. Understand the reaction. So as soon as I understood that my vines were reacting positively to what I was doing, the soil mainly, because obviously that is a number one mission in my biodynamic behaving, is trying to rebuild and build a healthy soil for the roots of my vines. In the wines, it's having a brighter fruit, a light, which is...
So more intense, but not heavier.
Yeah, more persistent, more precise, but not heavy. Even though the alcohol is 13.5, you don't perceive it when you drink it. And then it's the good accompaniment with food, so...
It's more savoury, yeah.
Yeah.
How far are you from Pisa then, Pisa City?
Pisa City is 45 kilometres.
Okay, so it's a
south.
Yeah, so if you're in Pisa, that's a short drive. It's quite a nice drive down the coast, isn't it?
Yeah,
the roads are a bit bumpy, but it's a nice little drive.
Yeah, it is.
And so if you are in the Pisa area, this really is a great estate to visit. It's really beautiful. It's kind of, you do feel like you're going back into the Middle Ages a bit, but it's, and I mean that in a really good way, a really complimentary way. You know, I've been to your estate.
You.
I loved your estate.
Thank you. You have to come back.
Yeah, and when it was organic, so I'd love to see what it's like when it's by now. Just one other thing about Pisa. I often get the train to Pisa, and I'm often helping confused tourists who are trying to work out how Italian train tickets work, because you can get on a train with a ticket, but if you haven't punched your ticket in before you get on the train, you get a fine.
Yes.
You get a multa. So I'm forever explaining, like, where are you from? I'm from Canada. So I said, right, this is what you need to do. And so when we get all the train ticket things sorted out and the train chugs off and everyone's really happy that they're not going to get a fine and thrown in jail, I say, where are you guys going? And they say, oh, we're going to go to Pisa. Oh, that's okay. So yeah, actually the city itself, yeah, what are you going to go and see? Well, you know, we're going to go and see the Leaning of Tower of Pisa. And I would say, didn't you hear what happened? And they look at me like, no.
You fell.
No, they fixed it. Anyway, I'm really sorry about that. I just had to go on.
It's true. They did fix it.
They've straightened it. That is my very infantile and extraordinarily expensive education. As you can see, it was totally useless, had no effect on me at all in terms of my mental or my emotional development. Anyway, I want to say thanks to my guest today, to Ginevra Venerosi Pesciolini from the Tenuta di Ghizzano Winery in Peccioli in the province of Pisa on the Tuscan coast. It's a beautiful, beautiful estate. It's now biodynamic. Not that really should count for anything. It's, if you go go there, you should go there because it's a beautiful estate and it's making wonderful wines. Thanks very much
Thank
for coming
you, Monty. Thank
Thanks
you.
Can I become your PR agent, do you reckon?
Sure.
Yeah?
I would love to.
Am I the right demographic for that? You know, sort of slightly graying, middle-aged, you know, rather sort of cynical Brit. You know, is that maybe I need to be a little bit more joyful? Or,
yeah, I need it.
Yeah,
I
need you it. Need to probably smarten my dress code up a little. You're just impeccably dressed. I look like a tramp. You know,
I look like
I slept outside the studio on the street, you know, for the whole night. Anyway, all right, I want to say thanks very much, Ginevra. You're a superstar. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ciao, ciao.
This podcast has been brought to you by Native Grape Odyssey, discovering the true essence of high-quality wine from Europe. Find out more on nativegrapeodyssey.eu. Enjoy. It's from Europe.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.